You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
March the 10th, 2020, Missouri, one of the states holding Democrat primary voting today. President Trump has not been tested for coronavirus. They said there's no need to do so. His chief of staff, newly named, has been tested, found to be okay, but decided he's going to take some time and self-quarantine for a while. And, of course, there'd been a report over the weekend from Dr. Anthony Fauci that the coronavirus task force had something like 4 million test kits that would be made available to the American public by the end of this week. There's been no update on that. President Trump did announce several steps to help Americans suffering because of the fear of the spread of the disease. He said he's meeting with lawmakers to discuss a payroll tax cut. Good idea. And financial assistance for hourly wage workers. Loans for small businesses, financial assistance for airline and cruise industries. He said it's not their fault, it's not this country's fault, so we need to help them. And the stock market responding positive, like that. The Iranian regime is now claiming that the coronavirus that has hit their country hard was created by Zionists. Created by Zionists who want to start a war with Iran. That's the story from Iran. But inside Iran, dissidents protesting in one of the nation's largest cities had a protest banner reading, "The Mullah's virus is decimating Iran's youth." In other words, they're blaming the Iranian mullah and the leadership in Iran for the coronavirus. You would not expect much good news and much good praise coming from California Governor Gavin Newsom, referenced President Trump, but when it comes to the coronavirus and how it's being handled, Governor Newsom has words of praise for President Trump. He said they were talking about the Grand Princess cruise ship that's been just off California's coast, and the governor said everything the president said he would do to help us, they've been doing. They're going to help us get this ship properly docked, the people on board properly checked, and they're doing everything we ask. That's high praise from a liberal Democrat governor in California. And, of course, around the world, coronavirus continues to be felt. Cyprus closing that country's largest hospital. The chief heart surgeon, one of those identified, is having coronavirus. And, of course, Italy has closed down about at least 25%, maybe a third of the country now, telling folks not to be traveling, stay inside. And there's an unnamed doctor that says what we're seeing here in Italy is just like war. To that extent, it is. And there's a survey out that is showing by the Job Creators Network that small business owners, those with less than 500 employees, found that almost 80% want free market-based health care as opposed to Medicare for All. The local business owners basically making it clear they think the Trump administration has been handling economic issues properly and that the Trump administration knows what's best when it comes to health care for the nation. 66% of the small business owners question, how would you rate the Trump administration on economic issues? 66% either responded good or great. And if you want one other clarification about coronavirus, and something now that will begin to bother some of you that maybe you weren't worried about it previously. Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam is announcing that it's suspending, indefinitely postponing, a tour of 17 U.S. and Canadian locations. They were supposed to be on the road the 18th of this month through the 19th of next month. Now Pearl Jam says, with deep frustration and regret, because of coronavirus, we're postponing. Aha, now it's got the attention of some folks. They didn't really care, but you cancel Pearl Jam, now we've got their attention. Well, at least for a little while. Maybe.
Larry Connors, USA. News and commentary.
Wellington Environmental specializes in making your world safer, especially for our children. A national chain of daycare centers that opened a facility in Washington, D.C. But soon, toxic vapors were discovered leaking from the ground. Wellington Environmental responded and put in a vapor seal so the children were no longer in any danger. Now, in another case, a child was playing with a toy in his basement. And like kids will sometimes do, he was putting the toy into his mouth. He got sick enough to be taken to the hospital. And what had happened? Wellington engineers and a chemist found traces of rat poison. So Wellington professionally cleaned up the danger. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beal Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
As you heard me say in news and commentary, Iran is blaming Zionists for creating coronavirus to destroy Iran. Is the coronavirus originally intended, ever was intended, to be a biological weapon? We're going to get in great detail a little bit later with retired Lieutenant Colonel, Marine Colonel Dakota Wood with the Heritage Foundation as we talk more extensively about biological warfare. There are numerous agents other than coronavirus that have either been used in the past or stockpiled or could be used, except for a problem of dissemination. How do you get it into the target zone and limit to that zone? The bubonic plague being one of them, smallpox, anthrax, ricin, Ebola, typhus, all could be engineered one way or another and creating a biological weapon. Then the issue of disbursement. The international community, of course, banned the use of chemical and biological weapons after World War I, then reinforced it in 72 and 93 by prohibiting any development, stockpiling, and transfer. 16 countries plus Taiwan have had or are currently suspected of having biological weapons programs. That would include the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, China, Cuba, France, Germany, Iran, Iraq, Israel, Japan, Libya, North Korea, Russia, South Africa, Syria. And that might not be a full and complete list, but that seems to be the most dominant list. The U.S. did have an offensive biological weapons program from 1943 until 1969. Currently, we are a member of the Biological Weapons Convention that has renounced any biological warfare. And yet we've got in Iran something that raises some big questions as to what are they dealing with? Are they dealing with a disease that they just didn't get control of fast enough? A disease that originated supposedly in Wuhan, China, deep in the interior of China. How did it suddenly get into Iran, and why so many? And here are some of the background details on the Iran situation. The regime in Iran is saying this was something created. In other words, saying it is a biological weapon created by Zionists who want to start a war with Iran. Now, the Jerusalem Post says the Iran state-run press TV has been pushing anti-Semitic conspiracies about the coronavirus just to distract from the Mullah regime's mishandling of the pandemic. The conspiracies come straight from the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. It is a recognized terrorist organization and claims that Zionist elements developed a deadlier strain of coronavirus to be used against Iran. The publication The Atlantic had done some investigating. One of the many observing that Iran was lying about how many coronavirus cases it had, maybe in hopes of containing public fear and anger. But then the number of mortalities and the number of highly visible public figures that got the virus in Iran were much too high, much more than the 7,000 cases they were claiming they had. They were originally reporting fewer than 400 cases. And yet, according to Atlantic, they finally began to acknowledge it could be more. And on top of that, members of the Iran parliament had gotten sick with coronavirus. And add to that, that 23 of the parliamentarian members proved positive. Two of them ended up dying. One on the 29th of last month, one on the 7th of this month. And the question being raised, why would Iran be lying about all of this? Many are saying Iran just wasn't prepared for it. A former CIA operations officer was quoted in an op-ed page that he wrote for The Hill, claiming Iran was being just as deceitful as the Chinese, but with far less capacity to take real action. They did not stop or abate or inspect flights to and from Iran and China, simply allowing them to come and go. But as far as the leaders of Iran, they're saying that they've been hit hardest, not because of their mishandling, but because it's been weaponized. A lot of folks have thrown around the term, could it be like the bubonic plague? An epidemic, of course, is a disease contained within an area, pandemic, when it goes way outside that area, which is what we have with coronavirus at this point. On every continent except for Antarctica at last report. And of course, you may or may not know a lot about the bubonic plague, but it was the cause of what they also called the Black Death, sweeping through Asia, Europe, and Africa back in the 14th century. 50 million killed. That would have been about 25 to 60% of the European population at that time. Killed many of the working. Some historians said that was a turning point in European economic development because wages had to be increased to get more people to work. And they were looking at it was being spread by infected fleas from small animals. Was it body fluids from a dead, already plague-infected animal? Either way, the bacteria was entering the skin through a flea bite and then getting into the lymph node system, causing swelling and eventually horrific deaths. Vaccines, of course, not very much known at that point, not very effective. The bubonic plague is one of those that will stand out forever as to anything that might be comparable to that. You need to be aware of how disastrous it can be for the world. Nowadays, two things work with us and against us. The spread of news and better health care would work for our advantage. The lack of the news coverage and the speed of traveling around the world working against us. But it gets back again, can you take something like this and make it a biological weapon? If so, how do you control it? They are now noting that for over a decade, since 2001, there have been instances of bubonic plague in Zambia, India, Algeria, China, Peru, Congo. Thousand, maybe 2,000 cases each year. But again, because of our new awareness and containment efforts and medical treatment, it's not gotten out of the box, so to speak. One source does state that between 1900 and 2015, the U.S. had 1,036 human cases, an average of 9 a year. And in 2015, not that long ago, 16 in the western U.S. developed the plague, two of them in Yosemite National Park. They usually occur in the rural northern New Mexico, northern Arizona, southern Colorado, California, southern regions. And often again, it's traced to rats, rodents, and fleas. In June of 2018, a child was confirmed to be the first person in Idaho to be infected by bubonic plague in nearly 30 years. The coronavirus is not shown anything to that extent from what we're being told. Question then is, are we getting all the information? When this story began to break out of China that it was originating and focusing on an area deep interior China, Wuhan, China, speculation started immediately. And some think it's legitimate questioning. Was somebody messing around with this stuff and it got out of control? Or did they actually intentionally put it out in some of the public and then they lost control of it? Or is all of that just a conspiracy theory? If there's any weapons development of that type going on, would it be going on in China? Certainly could. Same thing in Russia. Same thing in Iran. And yes, the same for the U.S., although we have signed off an agreement saying we would not. That's why I want you to a little bit later, we're going to be joined, as I said, by retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood with the Heritage Foundation. I want his take on the U.S. military and biological warfare in preparation for it, and some of his thoughts as this coronavirus is making its way around the globe. And the question again, could this be a biological warfare agent? I've got a piece here in front of me released by an author at Stanford University. The date of this goes back to 2001. But it's talking about a biophysicist very concerned about smallpox. He said, simply put, smallpox represents a direct threat to the entire world. Even though the disease has been eliminated in the wild, frozen stocks of smallpox virus are still maintained by the governments of the U.S. and Russia. But he says he's haunted by more than just the threat of a smallpox attack. What else could be in his range of concern? We'll take a short break. We'll come back and pick up with the answer. You want to look better, stronger, leaner? Visit my trainer, Jamie, and his team at Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. Check it out, redfitnesslounge.com, redfitnesslounge.com. Come on in, I'll be close to your mind, kind of mind, so big and so strong.
USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Almost 20 years ago, a biophysicist, Stephen Block, was concerned about smallpox being weaponized. That was, as I said, almost 20 years ago. And he was also concerned about things like anthrax, Ebola, typhus. And he's basically said, this is a poor man's nuclear weapon. If you recall, some of you, in 95, there was a sarin gas attack inside the Tokyo subway by a particular cult in that region. 13 were killed, thousands hospitalized. And there apparently were a series of failed botulism and anthrax assaults near the Imperial Palace, the Tokyo airport, and two U.S. military bases. During the Second World War, the Japanese military killed thousands of Chinese prisoners, subjecting them to experimental doses of anthrax, cholera, plague, and other pathogens. Both the U.S. and the Soviet Union have agreed, signing off on a treaty with 158 other nations, to ban all use of biological chemical weapons. But there's still belief that much of this is still on ice and available for some rogue nation, someone that's looking to cause panic. And sometimes a biological weapon would not have to have an immense, devastating, deadly impact. The sarin gas attack I mentioned a moment ago, killing 13, hospitalizing thousands, created a panic that lasts for a period of time and maybe forever in the minds of many. Biological weapons, not supposed to be in use, experiment still underway. Coronavirus suddenly surfacing. Some say it's just the flu. Others say maybe it was intended to be more. This is not to panic or frighten anyone. It's simply dealing with the issues of biological weapons and what we know and what we don't know about them. And it's the part we don't know that is of the grave concern. Look how fast, once we knew about coronavirus inside China, what's that, a month and a half ago? How fast it whipped around the world to every continent, save Antarctica. We're going to take a break. While we come back, going to be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel. I want to get his perspective on biological warfare and, of course, the problems that exist if someone's trying to use it for that. But then again, do they have to be successful or just enough to cause fear? You don't want to miss this discussion. We'll be right back.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
The IRS is clearly our most powerful government agency. If the IRS decides you've done something wrong, you're suddenly facing serious issues. I know that can be traumatic, and I found out trying to deal with the IRS on my own was a big mistake. So I called the Lance Drury Law Firm. The American Society of Tax Problem Solvers rates Lance Drury at the top. That's because Lance Drury has decades of experience. He knows how to deal with the volumes of regulations and red tape. Lance Drury quickly laid out a plan for me that would satisfy the IRS and save me money. And don't go into the IRS lion's den without Lance Drury by your side. Say you heard about Lance Drury on Larry Connors USA and get a free consultation. Lance Drury Law Firm, 314-238-7360. 314-238-7360. Call the Lance Drury Law Firm and sleep better at night.
Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a ever loving light on me. Yonder come is Rosie.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
We welcome back and glad to have him on board again, retired Lieutenant Marine Colonel Dakota Wood of the Heritage Foundation. Dakota, always glad to have you on board, sir.
Boy, I just love your show. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you, sir. As you know, as we reached out to you, I wanted to discuss the issue of biological warfare. And, of course, the coronavirus is part of the start point. Let me jump back to the statement by Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas the other day, raising questions that was something going on inside China with this virus that got out of the lab, out of control, which raises the question, were they working on a biological warfare? It doesn't say it was or wasn't. What was your first thought based on when the news began to surface and then the senator's thoughts and comments?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a natural jump. You know, if you really don't know what's going on inside somebody else's country, or in Russia, North Korea, Iraq, you know, back in the day with Saddam Hussein, China, it can be a lot of speculation. And you do have people who are aware of programs or capabilities that countries have and where those might be located. So virus jumps out of Wuhan. Oh, they also happen to have a biological laboratory there. You know, maybe not biowarfare, but, you know, just like we've got facilities that look at various pathogens to develop vaccines and stuff, the Chinese have the same kind of thing. So it's not that big of a leap to suspect that something, you know, might be. What I have read and what I've heard and colleagues have talked to, though, in the medical community is that you can go in and look at the actual virus. How is it constructed? Does it seem to be artificial? You know, that sort of thing, right? And the evidence indicates that this is more of a natural occurring sort of thing than something that has been engineered in an artificial sense or a laboratory sense.
Such as a common flu or cold.
Exactly, right? You know, the Ebola virus, right, that was in the news not too long ago there in Western Africa. You know, there are these things that are in the animal kingdom, stretched down to the humans. And as they multiply and divide, you know, natural mutations occur, right? And so when something mutates in a way, it might go down an evolutionary dead end. You know, it becomes more susceptible to heat or light or temperature variations or what have you. Or the mutation just enables it to be more successful or more hardy, right? We do that artificially with crops. You know, do you get water-resistant wheat or what have you? And you can do the same thing, or the same thing kind of occurs in the pathogen, the viral, bacterial worlds. And so these mutations can make something that in an earlier generation was not a problem, and all of a sudden the way it is able to interact in a human body turns out to be, you know, very serious.
And to that extent, if it's originally a natural event, mm-hmm. then it can be weaponized as well, and then it can be an even disguise so it does not appear to be that it's weaponized?
It can be. I mean, you know, with genetic sequencing, the ability of advanced technologies that make going in and messing around with the genetic composition of something like that, you can do those sorts of things in laboratory settings. It's very dangerous science because something that gets out into the human population, how do you stop it from spreading? So let's say if it was a biological warfare thing, how do you know it's going to affect just the enemy's forces and not your own, right? So there have always been these hesitations of using that sort of thing as a weapon. Now, in the scientific literature, which sometimes doesn't, you know, part too much from hard science, looking at the genetic construct of different racial groups or subtypes, could you engineer something that only affects Caucasians or Latinos or, you know, those sorts of things, right, based on the genetic profile? And people have wondered if something like that was possible. Again, would be absolutely devastating, but that's not to say that science isn't possible. But all that I've read is that this is a naturally evolving virus that through mutations or what have you has come up because now it is able to affect humans in the forms that we've been seeing in the news.
Well, by merely raising the question, mm-hmm. was it possibly a biological agent that got out of control or even refocusing on biological, it's not meant to alarm but at the same time educate, but are we raising a flag that shouldn't even be considered in this day and age, or it should definitely be considered?
Yeah, no, I'm all for information transparency, right? So what are the potential pathways or what are the potential challenges? And then you can address this is why this isn't a concern or how you would respond to it. If it becomes apparent to the public that governments are withholding information, naturally you're going to be suspicious. Why aren't they telling us that? Oh, it must be worse than what we thought it was going to be, right? And people respond to suspicions and to the unknown in the kind of pathologies that we're observing, you know, panic buying and hoarding and, you know, shutting down all sorts of activities, you know, the entire country of Italy. 16 million plus people, you know, is now been quarantined. Anybody flying into Israel has to go into a 14-day quarantine status. Anybody from, you know, anywhere in the world. So, you know, on the one hand, history tells us that quarantining is the best, most effective and quickest way to stop the transmission. If people aren't with people, you can't pass the disease, right? But there are economic implications to that. It certainly rises concern and stress levels, and then you can have just stress, you know, causing problems, right, in people, you know, increased blood pressure and worry and, you know, those sorts of issues as well. So I think discussions of these things, if they're moderate, if they're informed, and they're meant to educate without overly alarming, right, I think that's healthy, and I think governments should be really more in the business of doing that.
Well, there are several roads we could go down, but let me quickly, if we're looking at some of the viable agents that exist already without creating mm-hmm. something new, you got bubonic plague, smallpox, anthrax, ricin, all of these are available. And, in fact, does this country, like others, have some of that on ice for, quote, investigative efforts or preventive efforts, things of that nature?
Yeah, and you would have to. I mean, some of those, that one or two of them you mentioned, are more nerve agents as opposed to a live virus or, you know, bacteria or something like that. But if you had a bad actor that attacked a population in some way, you would want to know how to respond to that. You know, what is the genetic makeup of this thing? What is the vaccine? What are the protocols to respond? And if you said, no, any investigation into these types of pathogens, we're not going to do, well, you know, then your population or your military force is really vulnerable. So I think advancing medical science and coming up with cures and ways to mitigate the effects of a disease, you have to look at these sorts of things, if only to know, or most importantly, to know how to respond to them should they break out.
And some of the countries that we're now dealing with, some of their leadership, rogue nations and our rogue leaders,
gosh.
I mean, we know about the fear of the nuclear device, but these could be just as quick, if not more so.
Yeah, I mean, you can do genetic sampling and analysis and a little bit of engineering in your basement if you get the right kit. I mean, you know, technology makes things possible today at a very low price point that would have been impossible 10, 20, 30 years ago, right? So it is not out of the range of possibility that any regime, any country, that gets together the material and has some people that are halfway decent in the medical sciences, you know, in the genetic field, could be doing this sort of thing. So, you know, what is going on in the darkened kingdom of North Korea? Who knows?
Yeah, and to that extent, I found it interesting. Iran is claiming that this is produced by Zionists to get rid of Iran,
and yet
they've got dissidents in the streets of Iran, those that dare go out at this point, blaming the mullahs.
Yeah.
Bringing the mullahs for creating it and infecting the nation.
Yeah, authoritarian regimes, right, are victims of their own methodologies. So if you use fear and intimidation, withholding information, you know, isolating your people, then you always have to be concerned about blowback on that, right? So I am not surprised that the folks in Tehran are trying to point the blame other places because they have been so horrible at responding to an epidemic, it has to be, in Iran, that's affected the very senior leaders. You know, I mean, you know, principal advisors to the Ayatollah have been, you know, dying because they've caught this coronavirus. You know, now, this affects the upper age limits, you know, 70, 80s, compromised immune systems, just, you know, a lessened ability to fight off disease, just like you wouldn't want, you know, an older person in close contact with the flu or something like that, right?
All right, and after the 91 Gulf War, we found out that Iraq did have some botulism and other agents. In 79, a Russian facility had a spew of anthrax spores that ended up with 100 deaths. I mean, this stuff is all around us.
It is. And I worked for over a year or so on a biosurveillance project for the new Department of Homeland Security when it was new. And I worked with a gentleman who was in our intel community who, after the Soviet Union collapsed, was able to get into Russia, the old Soviet Union, talk with the scientists who worked on these kind of bioweapons sorts of programs back during the Cold War. And this stuff was real. And they were trying to figure out how to protect their own folks, but how do you hurt U.S., Western, NATO forces as well? I mean, so people were really seriously in that business, and that knowledge didn't go away, right? I mean, it's in the scientific literature, and people are willing to sell their services.
I've got to ask you, can you hold through a break? You open another door I'd like to go through. Do you
have
time? All right, we're going to go through a break. I've got to hit this. It's a hard timeout. And then we'll come back. We'll continue this interview with retired Lieutenant Colonel, Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood with the Heritage Foundation. And as you just heard him say, he's had worked with the Homeland Security to some extent on what we do know and what we need to know about biological warfare. We'll take a short break, and we'll be right back. Please stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
We welcome back again, retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood with Heritage Foundation. And in rushing to the break, I want to make sure I didn't overstate what you were telling us about your involvement with Homeland Security. Maybe I'd have you rephrase that again, make sure I did it correctly.
It was a program that Congress had authorized for the Department of Homeland Security to create a system that would get earliest indications of any kind of a bio event affecting plant, animal, or human health. So there's high-end, highly classified stuff, but then you have just a whole bunch of open source. You know, a local newspaper might report, you know, Farmer Brown's cows dying off or something like that. And so this program was meant to collect all that sort of information, sort through it, and make sense of it. You know, is there something to be concerned about? And then you would notify appropriate, you know, national leaders that there's something that might be responded to. So anyway, I was involved in that. We had a small team, pathologists, PhD, MDs, medical doctors, intel community representatives, and it was quite educational, you know, but how do you operationalize something like
that? Well, I know you can't give us certain details, but were you shocked or surprised by some of the info?
The extent to which Russia or the old Soviet Union was involved in these things didn't come as a surprise, but it was illuminating, you know, just how mature their efforts were. And you certainly become aware of both how devastating a particular virus or bacterial infection can be, but also how fragile they are. I mean, you know, these organisms operate in a very narrow window of viability. You know, the temperature, moisture, absence of light, that kind of stuff. So you can have some kind of something that causes a disease, but if it's out on the sidewalk and the sun's beating down on it and the wind is, you know, is on it, the temperatures, you know, come and go, it just doesn't last very long. So it's a weird thing.
My understanding is anthrax is one of those that you can remain viable for 100 years or so if it's dry and kept out of direct sunlight. But
yeah,
as you said, once you get the sunlight, it zaps it.
Yeah, you can go in kind of a dormant stage. You know, it can create kind of a spore or what have you. And then, you know, like yeast, if you've subjected to the right, you know, conditions, then it, you know, it pops back up. So each one of these little bugs has their own unique characteristics. And that's why you have to have laboratories and, you know, scientists that look at the characteristics, because then that tells you how you can defeat it. What works on one kind of pathogen might be completely ineffective for something else. It's why the common cold, which is in that coronavirus family, you know, is so difficult to defeat. Everybody catches the cold. You know, it'll be around for millions of years. You know, influenza is something like that. This is a different type of virus with the COVID-19, you know, coronavirus discovered in 2019, right? So they have different characteristics, and we need research to understand how to deal with them.
So when it comes to germ warfare, biological warfare, mm-hmm. the issue still gets to be, how are you going to disperse it and contain it for the target you want and it doesn't expand?
Yeah, and we've had this for millennia. I mean, you know, you can picture in the, you know, old medieval days, you take a cow infected with something and vault it over the castle wall. The Peloponnesian War between the Athenians and the Spartans came to an end because Athens, which had walled itself up, got a plague in there, and it devastated most of the population. You know, that's back, about 500-600 or so B.C. So this using biology and germs and those sorts of things has been an aspect of warfare, you know, for 2,000 or 3,000 years. But that also tells you that it has its limits. You know, I mean, the population hasn't disappeared. So, you know, it can be devastating in controlled circumstances. And something like this, like with cholera or with the 1918 Spanish influenza, it can take off, right?
Yeah.
If it's too lethal, the population dies out and it doesn't go very far. So this mortality range of about 4 or 5% really causes havoc, but it also allows the disease to progress through large populations. And the only way to really shut it down is to get, you know, social distancing. We've talked about personal hygiene, like, you know, washing your hands.
Simple things
those
that.
Sorts of things. Simple things.
Yeah, of course, you mentioned a moment ago something that might have slipped by what some of the folks heard, and I want to repeat it briefly. He did say, and they did do it during medieval times, take some diseased bodies or animals and catapult them into an area where they couldn't get inside and let the disease take over those inside.
Right. Right. So. Yeah, you know, the old Monty Python movie kind of made fun of that. Yeah, you know, but those sorts of things did happen, you know, where you would take diseased carcasses and launch them into a citadel under siege or into a city or something like that and see if nature could defeat your enemy.
Well, Dakota, I appreciate your time. In fact, I'm thinking in the War of the Worlds, didn't the aliens end up dying because they got the flu or the cold?
It was a common cold.
Common cold,
right? Well, so if you don't have a natural response, you know, protection to it, and that's why these new strains of influenza can be very difficult because the body doesn't have a natural immunity. So the population gets affected by it, antigens are developed, you know, and you kind of get hardened to it. That's why we have vaccine programs. You know, I just got my second booster shot for shingles, you know, and so the body then generates defenses so that you don't get the disease further on down the road.
Again, sir, thank you for your additional time you gave us today. We always do appreciate it.
Good to talk with you.
We'll do it again, you bet. Retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood with the Heritage Foundation. Excellent source of information, especially when it comes to this issue today. I'm looking at a quote from someone that said, anybody that would say that no one in their right mind would ever use biological weapons, but not everybody is in their right mind. Yep, that's correct. I remind you, of course, we'll be back tomorrow. Let your friends and neighbors and even your enemies know about this program. It's not all politics all the time. We cover a lot of different subjects. But, yes, we do get into politics, and a lot of subjects now have a political handle on them. But we also try to broaden the horizon. I throw a very wide net. I'd like to get as many of you can listening. We appreciate it. Back tomorrow. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.